right here, so. Oh, we talked it. Whoa, he cold topped it.
Okay. Gotta go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he on the sink.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Kevin and Mark, and we've got a guest, Mr. Daniel Morris. Hey, how are we, brother?
I'm all right, boys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for asking me on.
Oh, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you taking the time. Currently employed by TaylorMade.
Yeah. I've been with TaylorMade for, it's coming up to 6 years now, since started in 2015. So yeah, it's been an unbelievable journey so far since I've been with the brand. You know, fast moving, fast paced, which generally the golf industry is. So yeah, it's been a great 6 years so far. And my job, what I do day to day, is changed quite a lot from when I started, in terms of, you know, custom fitting and the options that we had for consumers back in 2015 to what it looks like now is, you know, it's tenfold. It's so much different from when we first started, definitely.
Yeah.
First question, I've got to get it off my chest. What do you think of Mark having a TaylorMade hat on, just because you're on from TaylorMade?
Well, I did see one of the clips on Instagram with, I think it might have been with Baldwin, or might have been with Charlie Hull. I think you did have a TaylorMade hat on it in one of them videos. So
I'm not just saying it because you're here, but I love the brand. So, you know, and you want to send my way, I'm the one representing, good. Not Kev.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. No, it's great to get you on. And as I say, the whole point of all of our shows is to provide insight, and having somebody who works with one of the best brands in golf is unbelievable. So just from your perspective then, obviously, just tell us what your role actually entails at the minute.
Yeah, so my role is a bit of a mouthful as a title that you see in the bottom of an email, but it's Experiential Manager Western Europe. So in layman's terms, what that is, you know, I'll head up a team that looks after anything customer or consumer based. So in terms of dealing with the public or dealing with the account, so custom fitting, training on the product, putting on events during the year for accounts. You know, last year we were able to do probably, I think off the top of my head, like 15, 16 events with the tour truck, where we've been able to have a custom fit session. You know, we used to call them demo days in years gone by, but we try and come away from that now, because, you know, it's not a demo experience. You know, we want to give the credibility of what it is and dial somebody in for the products and make sure that is a better performing product. So that demo experience is just somebody coming up, hitting a new driver for 10 shots and maybe saying to the pro yes or no, we give it a little bit more care and attention. So that would be the, you know, the day-to-day role of it, of leading a team to produce these fitting events, to try and, you know, essentially help golfers get better performance out of their clubs. You know, mainly driven for amateur golfers. You know, at times we'll see, you know, some pros who are trying to maybe on the lower tours from the European tour, trying to get there, or, you know, some top amateur golfers we'll see at the start of the journey. But we'll have a tour team as well who will, you know, concentrate on the European tour and whatnot. So it's, you know, we'll work together. You know, we work closely with the tour department. It was only yesterday I was on a meeting with one of the guys from the tour department, just seeing what they're seeing out on tour and seeing trends and their fitting and what they're finding, to then maybe how that's going to influence how us in our fittings and how we get out to the field as well. So it's, as I say, since when I started with the business, it's only gone bigger and bigger in terms of the custom offerings. And, you know, gone are the days of going into a pro shop and you've got a 3-to-pitching wedge or 3-to-sandwich sitting on your shelf, you know, and somebody buys that there and then because that was the only option. You know, there's still always going to be a market for somebody going into a shop and buying a standard set of products, because the way we build the products now, there's a set of irons for all different levels of golfers and whatnot. So there's still going to be a level of that, of people buying off the rack. But there's also going to be a, a lot more of a level now than what it used to be in terms of buying a custom fitted driver or a custom fitted set of irons. So we just want to make sure we've got enough coverage for the golfer who wants to come in and buy off the rack, and enough coverage of the golfer who wants to go in and buy a custom. Same as if you're buying a suit, you get somebody who goes in and buy off the rack with a suit, and you get somebody who wants to get fitted for that and dialed in. So there's no difference.
That's it. Do you know, in your experience, have you, like, when I first was coming up, as soon as I got down to 4 or 5, I thought about getting custom fitted. But now, I don't know, like, you see all sorts of people going to get fitted. Have you noticed that the standard for getting fitted is the golfer's actually less capable?
No, absolutely. We'll get higher handicaps coming in. You know, I would, in all honesty, I would say the average handicap, what I would see during the year would be 16, would be the average. You know, I'll have somebody off plus two, but I'll have somebody who is entry level to golf and maybe hasn't got a handicap yet, who, you know, wants to treat themselves to a set of golf clubs. And instead of going in and paying, you know, X amount of money to something that may not be right for them because they've never been in that situation with somebody to tell them whether it's going to be right or wrong. And, you know, who am I to tell them, because of the level that they're at, they're not going to get better performance, which they will. If you get somebody who is, you know, new to golf, and let's be honest, the high percentage of amateur golfers of a certain handicap will deliver a club a certain way. And, you know, a high percentage are going to hit a bit of a slice or a bit of a cut. You know, 20 years ago, you know, we didn't have the ability to do a draw bias driver and make it 5 degrees closed, maybe like what we do now. So absolutely, we'll see a plus handicapper to a 36 handicapper. And, you know, what we'll do is try and make their golf better, make them hit more fairways, hole more putts, you know, chips closer to the hole. That's essentially what it's about. It's trying to get, you know, somebody down on the handicap, get the scores lower. You know, there's no difference. I think that's why I was having this similar discussion with somebody recently. I think that's why, you know, I really am going to be biased, but golf is the greatest sport in the world, because
you don't find no argument for that, do
you? Yeah, you know, you can take Tiger Woods, in my opinion, the greatest player ever to play golf.
Also agree with that.
Yeah, and then you can take, you know, Bill Smith, who's 85 years old, off a handicap of 24, and him and Tiger Woods can have a legitimate game of golf because there's the handicap system.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, for me, there's no other sport that you can take a level of golfer here to a level of golfer here and have a match.
No,
you know, any age of 10 up to 90. We had a club team game just before the, would it be lockdown too? You get mixed up now, there's been that many, but yeah, I think it would have been October. So we had a club team game against the junior team, you know, and some of the juniors were age 8 or 9, which was unbelievable, you know, to see the level of some of them, you know, coming through. But, you know, the age 8, 38 handicap, let's say, they're playing off a forward tee. The games were coming in like halved after 18. 1-1, 2-1. You know, they're close games. You know, there's no other sport than that, you know, can do that. So yeah, certainly biased, and probably you two be the same. But yeah,
we're with you with that 100%. Yeah, what's the difference between your amateur off the street, regardless of the handicap, and what goes into their fitting compared to your top tour professionals? Is there an element of difference in that?
Certainly, time aspect will be one. You know, my day-to-day role, if I go to, I know, Mike, you said you remember it, S&A.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go to Southport and Ainsdale probably 3 times a year and do a fitting event for Jim there. And we'll do, well, it's generally a 4-hour event, but Jim generally does a pretty good day. So they quickly turn into 5 or 6 hour days because he'll drum up some interest. But, you know, I'll get half an hour, maybe 40 minutes to be able to fit somebody into a driver, you know, and there's an art to that, which you have to learn very quickly. You know, fitting any golfer is like a story. You've got a beginning, a middle, and an end. The end point being somebody wants better performance, whether that's more distance or more fairways or a better looking product. You know, everybody generally has the same goal. If you're not going to get any of them, people aren't going to change probably what they're gaming. So, you know, fitting an amateur golfer in 30 minutes, you have to quickly work out what they want, you know, and how we're going to get there. Now, if I see 10 golfers on a day, realistically, the 10 golfers are going to deliver the club 10 different ways. They're going to miss it, some in the toe, some at the heel, some high on the face, some low. That's just the nature of the beast of an amateur golfer. Obviously, when you are going to a tour level fitting and fitting, you know, the best players in the world, obviously there's a little bit more time aspect, you know, that's going to be spent because they deliver the club consistently every single time. You know, if you look at the numbers, if they've hit 50 shots with a driver and you look at the TrackMan numbers or the quad numbers, the chances are the averages aren't going to be too much away from the top versus the bottom, because it's just, you know, it's a repetitive swing. So in that sense, you know, I'm not going to say that the fitting is easier, because it's not, because there's a different level of detail that goes into it. But at least you can try to dial in that player a little bit more consistently, because you know what their misses are going to be. So if they'll see a repetitive of maybe a golfer missing it consistently on the toe or consistently on the heel, which maybe bring the spin down if it's consistently at the toe, or consistently bring the spin up if it's consistently out the heel. So you get to know what players misses at a tour level. You know, little things like getting the right lie angle right on somebody's driver at a tour level is key. Getting the right swing weight. You know, you could have a swing weight of D2 to D5 to D6, let's say, with the driver for three different golfers, but they'll have all different results if you give them three different swing weights. So if you go on our tour truck in the European Tour or the PGA Tour in the US, we'll have a, you know, a full information database of any of our staff players of what they like, you know, whether that's Martin Keimer having a driver, let's say it built at D5 off the top of my head, something like that. So when he comes on to try the new Sim 2 product that will, you know, we'll try and get him in, we'll build his specs to what he likes. Now, what he likes is going to be different to what the next golfer likes and the next golfer. So there's certainly difference in terms of the time aspect with the tour players. The other thing as well, there's a little bit more pressure on because the stats that they have now in terms of strokes gained, you know, if they lose a couple of points on strokes gained with driving distance or accuracy, let's be honest, over a 4-round tournament, that could be worth $50,000, $100,000. It could be the difference in getting them into top 50 in the world to get them into the Masters. You know, they're the finite details of, you know, what they're working with. So there's certainly a lot more ingredients in the pot at that tour level.
Yeah.
But there's no difference to what we do at an amateur level. The net result is the same. You know, we're still trying to get to the same goal. And, you know, what we have now in terms of the ability to fit an amateur golfer, a 28 handicapper amateur golfer, you know, the loft sleeve, different lofts on the head, different head, you know, we can dial in so much to be able to squeeze as much performance out of an amateur golfer as a tour pro, even more, to be honest, because if a player moves into a new sim to sim two, we, you know, we're working to margins. We're trying to squeeze out, you know, more ball speed, you know, more fairways hit. I'll see an amateur golfer who's using a driver that is maybe 5 years old, but it's totally the wrong setup. He's using a 9-degree driver when he needs a 12-degree, or it's sitting 3 degrees open, it needs to be 3 degrees closed. I might say 15, 20 yards because they're using a product that's wrong for them. So you can certainly see the gains much more on an amateur golfer than maybe you'd see on a tour level golfer.
Yeah. No, it's funny. It's interesting to say that, because we'd done an interview with Chris Hansen, and one of his biggest regrets was he was playing around with different drivers. He wasn't affiliated to a brand, so he was trying all different ones with the reps. And he said that he never done enough testing. He never got the results that were required to justify that change. So one of the pieces of advice that he gave on the show was make sure that you've got enough evidence to prove that that driver is going to improve your game if you're going to change.
That's why the launch monitors now are so key for professional golf or amateur golf. You know, we're lucky at TaylorMade, you know, all the team, you know, that I'm with, we've all got TrackMan 4 or GC Quad. You know, we get armed with the best materials in the game to be able to validate the performance that we get out of our products. You know, you've got to be able to measure that to see the improvement for the golfer. And you know, one thing I pride myself on, and you know, and the team as well, you know, we're not salespeople. You know, we're not there to sell a product, to give somebody the hard sell. Obviously, I understand my role in the business. I'm there to try and, you know, create sales by the experience that we give, or the knowledge that we give, or the performance that the driver or the set of irons give. But yeah, I'm not going to stand there on the range and say to Mr. Smith or Mrs. Smith, this is going 10 yards further, or these are irons that are absolutely perfect for you, if they're not, because it's only going to come back on me and it's not going to make the game any better. So that's why the launch monitors and what we can offer as feedback and information to golfers now is absolutely golden. You know, you look at, take it back to a tour level, look what Bryson's doing. You know, that's all driven by data.
Yeah.
You know, you see him in that gym where he's working with Kyle Berkshire. I mean, that's just purely driven by data and numbers. He's trying to squeeze as much club, as much ball speed out of himself and the products as he can to try and get that little bit more edge over the field. You know, that, and you wouldn't be able to do that, you know, 20 years ago. I can remember, it's mad. Now, this is probably going back to mid-90s. My brother had a little go at, he turned pro, he was a good amateur golfer in 90s, played county level. I think he was like plus one, plus two, something like that. Tried to have a go at the entry level pro game. And I used to go up to the practice ground and practice with him. And what he used to do with his yardage, remember in school, you used to have the meter stick.
Yeah, yeah.
With the wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did like 10 nine irons, and then we'd walk with the meter stick up the practice ground to try and work out where the ball had carried. You know, you think, you know,
that was probably revolutionary technology.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I don't know where he got a meter stick from. I don't know whether he got it from school or something, but yeah, I mean, that's, you know, whether you see, it's got a funny video with Montgomery about, I think it's about 5 years ago, he was at an Open, I think it might have been at Troon, and he's saying in a press conference, you know, everyone's got these Trackmans. He said, this is my Trackman, and he's got a score saver in his hand. You know, that's what we used to do. You used to go into the pro shop, buy a stroke saver for, you know, for £3, and that was it. You'd work out where your 150 was and work it back. I can remember as a junior golfer, you'd look for the 150, no idea what it would be front pin, you know, at the back or in the center, and you just hit it. You know, now, you know, I'm only talking personally, but I'm guessing you boys are the same. You go out and you've left your Bushnell at home, you have an absolute shocker when you're on the course.
You're lost, aren't you? Yeah. It's like leaving the driver in the house, isn't it? It's part of the horrific.
Yeah. That's a little bit there with the launch monitor, like your Bushnell, you know, that you've become to rely on that to make sure you squeeze as much performance out of your games as possible.
It's like you were saying there, that you're not a salesman. It's almost like there is no sale, because unless the numbers say it, then you're not going to be changing to it, are you?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I absolutely love the brand, and I would probably speak for, you know, I know a couple of the guys who work at Callaway and Titleist, and, you know, they would say the same. When there's a new driver that gets brought out, you know, you'll get the negative remarks on social media, or another new driver coming out. You know, you don't see that when there's a new iPhone comes out, or there's a new version of a Q3 come out. You know, we have a thing where we say, we will only bring a new product to the market if we can beat what's prior there. And every year, the R&D team, they do it. They produce unbelievable products to better what was, you know, what's being replaced.
Were you talking there about they won't bring a driver out until they've got, until they know it's going to make those improvements? So what actually goes into that, the devil in the detail? Do players get a say in that? Or is that literally leave it to the professionals and they will bring the new product to you? Or do they consult with players to say, what do you think can improve?
Yeah, we'll have, you know, there's millions of dollars that goes into the R&D to try and, you know, gain better performance. And we'll be working on products now, which is probably 3-4 generations down the line. That's how far we're working advanced.
Because... it's the Sim 3 in production then now?
I mean, what I would say is they'll be working. Listen, I'll know whatever a new product would be the same time as you. Now, who knows when a new product come out? Could be 12 months, could be 2 years. Who knows when the next product could be out? But we'll only bring something out if it...
the Sim 2 and then put all this work and all this effort in. Like... you say that the
they'll be working on future generations, absolutely. Yeah. And that whether that could be, you know, working on blueprints, you know, on, you know, through digitally and looking at different ways how they can produce it, you know, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're always trying to work out the same, no difference with any other brand in any industry. You know, if you take a Formula One car. Next year's Formula One car, they're not working on now. You know, they've been working on that for a number of years because they want to make sure that when they bring something to the market, it's better. So it's, you know, it's going to take time. So you're always working, you know, a few generations down the line to make sure you bring something to the market.
There's not that much supply and demand for F1 cars out there, though, is there, compared to...
a bit more expensive an F1 car, definitely.
So yeah, so you're saying there the players then get a say in that, do they? As the making the new product and things.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we'll have a kind of a working group. So from R&D to, you know, in Carlsbad at the Kingdom, there'll be some elite players in there who get to see. But yeah, they'll take feedback from Tiger. You know, one feedback from Tiger this year was that he wanted the paint line to be a little bit squarer and visually looking better. And I don't know whether some of that snippets have been released as marketing yet, but when he gets shown the driver the first time, he says, yeah, that paint line is so much better for me when I look down. You know, Tiger Woods ain't going to change into something unless it's better. Yeah. You know, he's not. You know, all the players, to be honest, all the players will be like that. They're only going to change if it's better. You know, Tiger, for example, he loved the M5 three wood. He had the titanium three wood, didn't want to change that. And the tour team changed him. I think it was the week before the Masters in November, got him into the Sim titanium three wood. Obviously now we're at Sim 2 titanium three wood. So whether or not we'll get him into that, it might be that he looks the look of it. I think he likes it a slightly smaller head. So the Sim 2 titanium model is a little bit smaller than the prior model in the Sim. So there's a good chance we're going to get him because it's going to suit his eye. It's going to match up to the performance that he wants. So, yeah, it doesn't matter whether, you know, it's Tiger Woods or, you know, as I say, making it relevant to an amateur golfer. If it's not better, you know, they ain't going to change. Absolutely not.
That's it. Do you know, as well, just moving away from heads a second. So you've got a driver off the shelf and it's got an X shaft in, and then you go and get, do you deal with any of the shaft fitting and stuff like that as well?
We'll carry I don't know what we got, 40 shafts in the demo kit this year. We've actually just in Europe, we've actually just done a deal with sounds a bit naughty, we have an exotic shaft program which we've worked with the US on, where
sign me up.
Yeah, it's got, you know, I was part of a group that we helped choose which ones were going to come to the market for Europe. And the only shaft that, you know, people have consistently asked me for over the years that, have you got this? I like the look of this one. And you boys will probably know it is the Tour AD graphite design. Yeah. You know, the orange shaft Tiger put in play and he made it unbelievably famous. You know, Jordan Spieth sat it in, think he's had it in that hybrid, or his Arnie's had it in a three wood. You know, it's visually very noticeable on the PGA Tour, and it's an unbelievable shaft. Gives somebody that higher launch, lower spin, you know, and that's the golden nugget for distance. And I consistently get asked for that, and that's something that's been in the kit since when I started in 2015, and it's still absolutely flying now, and it's not going to leave, because you'll see trends with shafts. You know, some come in and some leave, and then there's a new generation and whatnot. That graphite design has been stable right the way through. The only one I would say since last year, which is consistently people have asked me, is the new Fuji Ventus, but the Velocor. That shaft's gone absolutely berserk on globally on the tours. And that's the one consistently people have been asking me for. So we've been able to access that for the first time this year in Europe. So, you know, it's expensive, you know, what it is, that the way it's produced. It's going to take a little bit more time for us to get it in Europe because it's going to become direct from the US. But yeah, that's going to give the golfer, if they want it, the exact same shaft that Dustin Johnson's got in play, or I think Justin Thomas has been using it the last couple of weeks. Rory's put it in the last couple of weeks as well. It's just going to absolutely, it's gone absolutely mad. So yeah, the shaft is, you know, part of the, you know, fun part of the job, because, you know, it's cool to learn what different profiles year in, year out doing. And, you know, knowledge is golden in what we do. If we can talk, you know, what shaft profile does what, you know, and we can relate that to the amateur golfer and see the performance, what they get by maybe changing a different shaft with a different head. You know, that's the outcome is
what I wanted to ask you, because I've just bought one of them Tour ADs. Funnily you should mention that. But you see them on even secondhand on eBay, you see them, they're going for £350, £400. I'm off one, so I've only just sort of made that jump. And my coach was like, you know what, I can tell you're serious at golf because you've just bought that shaft, you've made a big investment. So as far as you're concerned, money versus performance, is it worth the average golfer buying a £400 shaft?
That graphite design one is a little bit different. Is it the orange one you've got?
The orange one, yeah.
The reason why that shaft is really popular, one, the graphics, Tiger used it, looks great. Number one, that's why it's popular. But two, in terms of performance, what that does is a little different to most of the other shafts that you can get at commercially at retail that maybe I would carry on a typical fitting event. Because what it's produced, it'll try and give you a little bit more dynamic loft on the golf club to produce a little bit of a more higher launch, but control the spin. You know, that is the golden nugget. That's how somebody is going to get more distance. Now, obviously, the golf swing has a huge implication on how performance of a golf is going to be. So without going too technical, let's say we've got golfer A swings a golf club at 100 miles an hour and delivers the driver at an attack angle of 4 degrees on the up, launches it at 17 degrees and spins it at 1900. That's going to go like an absolute rocket, and they are going to maximize distance. Yeah. If you have a golfer swings at 100 miles an hour and delivers the club 4 degrees negative, so 4 degrees down of an attack angle, it's going to launch it lower, it's going to spin it higher, and there's not going to be as much energy transfer into that golf ball as golfer A. So there's probably realistically going to be, without doing the sum and looking at maybe 30 yards difference, 25 yards difference, if somebody's 4 degrees up to 4 degrees down. It's a huge difference. Now, where that shaft comes in, it can help all golfers, you know, be able to produce that higher launch, lower spin. And that's, you know, in terms of physics, that's how we are going to achieve a little bit more distance of the golf ball. The way golf clubs are produced are totally different to what, you know, what they used to be. So taking back to, you know, your two junior days, what would be the driver that sticks out in your head? What did you use? I would say, give you an idea, I would give you 975D.
Yeah.
Remember the 975D?
Yeah.
So coming to kind of, you know, towards the end of the 90s, you know, 90, yeah, probably a little bit early, 96, 97. You know, I think Tiger had one in play. You know, when you look at the PGA or the Global Tour, most people were playing one of them. Now, generally what you were seeing was low-lofted golf drivers back then. You know, you wouldn't go amiss of seeing somebody at your golf club playing a 6.5 degree driver.
Yeah.
You know, if it was one of them, because of the way they were constructed, in terms of the CD location in the driver. What golf balls used to tend to do, they used to start low off the tee, reach a bit of a peak height, and then they drop. So what that would be, you know, starting off low, but there's a lot of spin in terms of the drag to get the ball up in the air, and you're not getting much rollout because the spin was obviously so high. Obviously, golf balls were different then, so they're going to spin a little bit more as well. Where now, if you think something like we brought out in 2013, 2014, SLDR, and the whole campaign with SLDR was loft up, give yourself more loft to generate more distance. Because of the way that that head was constructed, was low forward CG of the driver, so all the weight was shunted towards the front and low in the product. So if you had a lower lofted driver in one of them, depending on your angle of attack, you'd struggle to get it up in the air. So you needed more loft. So, you know, going back, people were going into a 12 degree driver when they were usually a 10.5 degree golfer, if you like.
Yeah.
Because the way that that head was constructed, it was such a lower spinning head. They needed the ball up in the air quicker because it was going to come off with so much lower spin. So in terms of the way that the driver manufacturers have gone, it's completely changed.
Yeah.
You know, from towards the end of the 90s. So that 975D is a perfect example of how that was constructed then to what a driver's constructed now is totally different.
Interesting. Just going back a bit, a touch on the shafts there. Do you know much about the Autoflex?
Yeah, I haven't hit it yet. Yeah, the bright pink one.
The bright pink one, yes. Yeah. So I was having a practice round with one of the professionals at the golf club, and he let me have a go with that. And I always struggle off the tee, don't I, Kev? And I ping this, and obviously it's popular because of the flex in it, but it's an extra stiff. And I had it in a sim, and it went so far. And I was like, right. And then we're talking about cash and how much it costs for the driver. Like, that shaft was like £800. So I was thinking, I want it, but I'm not paying £1,000 for the driver.
Is it worth it, would you say?
To be honest, with the Autoflex, I haven't hit it and I haven't had somebody in front of me to see what the difference in performance would be. So it'd be unfair for me to say yes or no to that. One of the guys who looks after the tour players in the US, he was spending some time with an ex-major winner a couple of weeks ago at the Kingdom. And this golfer turned up with a Autoflex bright pink shaft in his driver. And Chris, the lad who I know works out in the PGA Tour, he was saying, why have you got this? Or been testing it? And I think at the end he got it whipped out and said, no, that's not what you need. Let's look at something else. Because and all that Autoflex is being driven by is people trying to squeeze out as much performance out of a driver as possible to gain leverage on distance versus the field. Yeah. You know, that just shows everybody at all levels are trying to squeeze as much out that you know. Like the idea of that shaft, you know, whether it's whatever it is, $800, and you're thinking, is that going to be the one that's going to, you know, if you're asking me, do I think it's going to give you £800 worth of performance?
I don't even
probably
mean
not.
I don't even mean just the Autoflex. I mean, you know, just the upgraded shafts that you're paying £300-400 for, like versus your off the rack ones. If you fit it up right for your driver, do you think they bring more better benefit to your average golfer?
Yeah, I kind of got lost a little bit in the last question when we were talking about the graphite design one. That's kind of what you were touched on. That one, yes, a golfer is going to, even an amateur golfer, is going to see an improvement in performance by moving into that shaft because it's quite particular on how it's made. If, let's give you an example of John Smith, who's been popular in this podcast so far, as I've used his name a few times. Yeah, if John Smith comes to me on a fitting event and he's off a handicap of 18 and we fit him in the Ventus Blue, mid-launch, mid-spinning characteristics, and fit him in, the performance is great. That's the one for him. And then he says to me, or you do this Ventus Blue in the Bellacore version, don't you? It's £240 more. Have you got that one? I think what you're asking me, am I going to see a difference in performance for him? Realistically, no, I don't think we are. I think having that shaft, what we've got, the commercial shaft, is absolutely fine because they've come on leaps and bounds of where they used to. Again, you know, when I first started, I think the first driver that I worked with was R15, an aero burner. So in the R15, from memory, it was a speed of 57, which was made exclusively and built for TaylorMade. And then I think in the aero burner, in the driver, pardon my memory, test now, I think in the driver and the fairway, it was, I think we called it a Reax, which was a TaylorMade made shaft to go out to the market. You know, and we've seen a trend that the golfer doesn't want that basic standard shaft. You know, the amateur golfer wants what the tour players are using. So when we launched M1 is when we really started to see the influx of custom shaft offerings, and that's just gone bigger and bigger and bigger. So you know, you buying a driver now in the last 5 years versus 10 years, just a standard, I hate the word standard shaft because I think it devalues it a little bit as a standard shaft. I always say like a key shaft offering. You know, they're so much better than what they used to be. It's not a TaylorMade made shaft with the graphics on. If you take this year in our Sim 2 products, we've got a Tensei Blue, which is Mitsubishi. We've got a Kuro Kage. We've got a Fujikura Air Speeder. They're not made by TaylorMade. They are made from the manufacturers, and we will buy them direct from them. We'll have these, you know, additional ones like the Velocor, and the difference with the Velocor is it's the technology inside. Now, if you make that relevant to Dustin Johnson, he's going to deliver the club consistently in a certain way. So in terms of performance, it's going to feel a little bit better for him because it's probably got a little bit more graphite in it, the way it's made. And the Velocor is like a little dusting inside, which is to get the face a little bit more consistent at impact to make sure that's delivered consistently. So it's going to feel a little bit better, a little bit smoother. But, you know, Bill Smith or John Smith, you know, isn't going to see that much difference. It's more getting him dialed in for the right head, the right loft, the right shaft. You know, that's going to have a more implication.
So them shafts that you're getting from TaylorMade, when it says made by TaylorMade, they're just literally graphite shafts made with like the graphics of a Tennis Eye or a Project X on it.
Sorry. Yeah, we would work with a manufacturer. So say it was Aldila, would work with Aldila, and that you get one shaft, and it will be painted with Aldila with TaylorMade graphics on, and it might say by Aldila underneath.
Yeah.
But yeah, now, you know, we were doing a buy-in for the year for the demo kits for Europe, and we had to put a big order in, and it's gone direct to each individual manufacturer for, you know, whether what we ordered, you know, 150 times 12, you know, let's say for all the demo kits. So yeah, I mean, we've kind of reacted to that because the golfer certainly wants that. All levels of golfer, you know, they want to try, you know, I'll get, you know, 25 handicapper who wants to try 3 or 4 different shafts. That's part of the experience. You know, they want to see a different performance. They want to see what the bright red shaft does to the lilac coloured shaft to the pit. You know, that's what I'm there to give them an experience, but try and get better performance. There was an analogy used recently on a call. It's, you know, we've got to scratch their itch. They want to see a little bit like what you said there, Mark, about the Autoflex. You know, you've got to scratch that itch to see what the performance gains. You know, you're interested, you know, well, why is that bright pink shaft £500 more, you know, what that's going to give me, you know? And that's the same with all golfers. They want to see what different shafts can do for their game.
You know, you see a head and on the tour van, it's like a tour issue compared to if I go and buy a Sim 2 now from Clubhouse Golf, or you get a tour issue one off the van. What's the difference?
It's as though I've asked you that question to ask me, because the answer will be great for any listeners, because it used to be, you got a tour head, can I buy that tour head? There's absolutely no difference what I get to what you'll get to what the tour level guys get.
You know, from Clubhouse Golf is what Target or DJ be using?
100%. Now, when we launched M5, M6, we had something called the speed injection ports on the face, where we would inject a resin into the head. So the main difference with the tour heads kind of taking it back slightly would be we would know what we would cherry pick, you know, we would know maybe what the quicker heads are, you know, coming off and getting them on the tour truck. But the way we produce them now, there's no difference. There's no cherry picking now. They, you know, they all come off the same line, because basically what the speed injection does, we would make every head illegal. We would produce it past its legal limits. Now, obviously, we can't risk getting it an illegal driver in the marketplace, because the absolute shit show that would cause, you know, whether that's on a PJ Tour, European Tour, or you have illegal drivers in the marketplace, it's an absolute headache, because the RNA would be involved, the USGA would be involved, and everything would have to go back to the factory. So we can't risk getting an illegal driver out in the market. But the way we produce them at an illegal level, and it's first reduction. So what that means, it comes off the face quicker than what would be allowed of the COR. So the COR limit is 0.83. So you get it past that 0.83. But on M5, M6, what we used to do is we'd insert we call it a tuning resin into the face on the port. And what that would do is essentially calm the CT, which is the characteristic time, which is the spring, if you like, the trampoline off the face. We would slow that down to dial it into the absolute limit of 0.83. So that's why we know, you know, if you order something off Clubhouse or American Golf or Scottsdale, wherever it may be, it's going to be consistently the same speed coming off that line, the same way it's going to be the same on the tour truck. So we've still got the speed injection ports this year on the products. We've been able to get the two of them off the face and get one into the toe, because the way we mill the face now, we can dial that in on the heel, but it's a little bit tricky to do it on the toe, being a bigger area in the way it's produced to the golf bullet impact. So we just slow it down in the toe to make sure it's at that level. The only, you know, to answer your question, that, you know, what's different to a tour head, and if you look at, I don't know whether you follow Trotty Golf, yeah, on Instagram. Yeah. If you look at any of his videos that he posts, you'll see the stickers on the tour heads when they come out the draw. One of our lads in Europe, Sam Day, he's really good on some of the content that you see on the European Tour. So they're not knowing which one's quicker versus retail, so they're going to be exactly the same. But what we will do, we'll have a look, we'll work to the tolerances on the loft on the head. So let's say we take a 10.5 SIM 2 driver and we'll measure the head, and that might measure it 10.2. one of them, and then we'll take another one and it might measure at 10.6. Wow. Because on the notes that we've got for the players, we will know that, I'll use Martin Cameron as an example, again, he might like a 10.5 head, but it measures slightly lower, 10.2. Yeah. So then when they're looking in the drawers, when they're fitting Keimer, Tommy Fleetwood, whoever it may be on the tour, they'll know which head is going to be best to dial that individual golfer in. So that would be, you know, that's the only difference really, that the, in terms of the intricacies of it, you know, exactly to the point which one measures what in terms of loft and lie as well, because the getting the lie angle right for the tour players is one of the most important things in terms of getting that performance out of them.
We're talking there about performance, and each time we're talking about this, we're talking about trying to get that extra bit of distance, but obviously major spanner in the works with the USGA and the RNA, where they're trying to bring that distance back. Obviously, yeah. a lot of the professionals have been very vocal about it. Rory's been vocal. Webb Simpson's talking about changing the course designs, making more dog legs. You've got JT who's backing up and protecting the manufacturers, because like he says, a lot of money is going into this and they're already working on things 2-3 years in advance. So what's the tailor-made position on this whole bringing the distance back and what's going to be happening moving forward?
I think Rory, me personally, I think Rory and his statements hit the absolute nail on the head. You know, and any of your listeners who haven't seen that, I'd tell them to reach out. And, you know, somebody from a standpoint of power in his position in the game, of, you know, a leader in his craft, you know, when somebody like Rory talks, people listen. Yeah. I think he's hit the absolute nail on the head as how he talks about it. I mean, from a standpoint, you know, we made a global statement on it a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, and, you know, what we stand for as a brand is to make a golfer better. You know, I think the RNA and the USGA, the way they're looking at it, is, as Rory put it, is a real small, fine out window, you know, making it relative to Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau. DeChambeau, you know, with a
1% or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Well, Bryson's turned around and he's thanked them for the compliments, hasn't he? Typical Bryson style.
For me, it just, you're not going to get any difference. What are they protecting? Because it doesn't matter if somebody wins, if Rory McIlroy wins the US Open at 20 under, yeah, and the second place is 19 and the third place is 17 under, they're all playing the same course, you know.
It's competitive still, isn't it?
If you draw the driver back or draw the ball back to take distance off it, potentially the strokes may drop a little bit because they're going in with a 7-9 versus a 9-9 or a 5-9 versus a 7-9. But what's going to happen? Who's going in with a 7-9 instead of a 5-9? It's Rory, it's DJ, it's Koepka, it's DeChambeau. They're still going to be the longest hitters and going in with the shortest irons and still going to be coming out on top.
And who wants to see the ball in the middle of the green every time? You want to see them pins getting attacked, and there's no better way to see that than going in with the wedges and the scoring clubs.
Yeah, if you give an amateur golfer, you know, a golf ball that doesn't go as far, or a, you know, a driver which is going to make them go in with a 3-wood instead of a 4 hybrid. You know, we all talk about growing the game and getting more people into golf. And unbelievably, what a global pandemic has done is got more people into golf.
Yeah.
You know, we are, as a golf fan, golf industry, we are absolutely riding a wave. And at the moment, let's hope this wave continues, because it's only, you know, only exceptional for the game of golf. You know, I'm sure you boys are the same. You know, people you went to school or college with, or who didn't play golf, who've never shown an interest in golf, you're getting the odd text saying, oh, who shall I go and see for lessons? Or can you get me some clubs? What shall I get? You know, I've had that for the last, you know, 9-10 months or however long this has been going on for. So why do they want to risk that and make it harder and get people, you know, I've got one of my closest mates, he started playing about 3-4 years ago. And it's a bit, in kind of my close group of friends, yeah, we've all played golf since a young age. I've got Paul Waring, who's a, you know, European Tour winner, two lads are PGA pros. You know, we've all grown up in, you know, playing golf and living, breathing it. And one of our close mates started playing golf about 5 years ago, something like that. And he loves it. But he's, you know, it's hard, isn't it? You know, it's, if you're a grown adult taking up the game, it's hard. It's like us starting left-handed, and you know, I'm making your way back down again. So he's got to a handicap. Elate that I'm talking about him. John, his name is Elate that I'm talking about this.
Especially if he's playing against the European Tour pro.
Yeah. So he loves, he wants, he got himself a new set of 790s back end of last year. I've got some wedges on order for him, and he loves it. He wants to get better. I think in the new handicap system, he's got down to like 18, something like that. But let's just say he's hitting it gone from 260 to 230, and he's now going to go in with a 3-wood instead of a 5-iron or whatever it may be. He hates it anyway because he can't get any better. He loves it because
the game's hard enough.
It's kneecapping everyone, isn't it? It's not just kneecapping the longer hitters. It's kneecapping. It's taking 30 yards off everyone. And who wants that?
I don't think it'll happen, personally, because I haven't heard one person other than the RNA or the USGA say, I think they haven't said it's going to happen. They're just exploring it, aren't they?
One of the points that they made was about changing. You have a specific club for an amateur and a specific club for a professional. But one thing me and Kevin spoke about on that situation is, then what about if you've got these elite amateurs who want to play in a professional, who qualify for a professional tournament? They've got to completely change the club within a week. Yeah. And this is a big opportunity for them. Same way when an amateur qualifies for the Open, or what about when they make that transition into the professional game? It's tough enough for the ones on the mini tours financially and trying to break through and step up that ladder. Yeah. And then they've got to change the clubs.
You just, uh, for me, yeah, it's a non-starter. And you can take any sport at any level at any age. What if somebody takes an interest in that sport and they invest in it, what do they want to do? They want to wear or play or use what the heroes or their icons that they follow. That's, you know, what are you going to do? Nike going to produce a different level of clothing to what Rory makes. You know, to be fair, they do it in the football. If you look at that, you know, whether you're Reds or Blues, but you look at that Liverpool kit, you've got one jersey, haven't you, which is the slightly cheaper option. Then they do that Nike Vapor version, but the kids want to wear what the players wear. You know, that's
parents are fuming over it.
Yeah, but that's what it is, isn't it?
I honestly believe that these governing bodies, when they're changing rules and they're making all this stuff up, they're just so then they're actually got a purpose.
Yeah, I think that's what Rory alluded to, wasn't it? I think it's
they're making just, unnecessary noise.
Yeah,
I mean. You know, there's some bit in them new rules, isn't there, the last couple of years, which have been, you know, good for the game. In terms of this new handicap system, I'm guessing you've probably done a podcast on that.
Yeah, we did.
You know, so there's aspects of that which, you know, I understand. You know, you can go to anywhere in the world and you're all playing off the same level playing field. But, you know, there's little things when they add the options to change some of the rules. You know, things like some, you know, again, Bill Smith, John Smith, will use him as an example as well. He's hit a 220 down the middle of the fairway, best drive of the day, and he's in the middle of a divot. Or Dustin Johnson, it's a 330 down the 13th at Augusta. He's in a divot. He can't do anything about it. You're being penalised or something. He had a perfect opportunity there to just tweak a rule that you can take a preferred lie from a divot because you're being penalised for a great shot. But they left it alone and, you know, made some other crazy rules.
But you look at Patrick Reed, if the ball's embedded, you get a free drop. Is a divot not embedded? You're below the ground, aren't you? So it's the exact same thing.
There's no difference. Yeah.
No difference whatsoever. No totally difference, agree.
Yeah. But yeah, as I say, I don't think, my gut feeling is I don't think that's going to come to fruition. I think I haven't heard any manufacturer, tour player, amateur golfer, podcast, Instagram, YouTuber who's saying any positive thing about it. So, you know, when something's like that,
they need to leave it alone.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
So we've had a big talk on drivers there. I've got a few questions on wedges. What I want to know is, what's the most common wedge setup on tour as in terms of loft?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a common setup as such, really, to be honest. You know, you take Tiger, for example. He's got his pitching wedge, which his lofts on his irons are, you would say, weaker compared to the rest of the field because he just wants to hit a number and hit a shot. So his three wedge setup is his pitching wedge in his set, and then he has, we do a 56 and a 60. Because if he wants to hit a knockdown shot, he'll do it with his wedge. You know, he is, you know, he's the best at that, isn't he? So he's, you know, you've got one end of the spectrum with him and a setup, and then you've got some other players like, I think DJ, you know, we've done so well with the high toe wedges, and we've got a new high toe, which is I think we've just launched it. Yeah, I think we are post embargo. That came out last week. So we've got a new high toe with a raw face, you know. That's made its way into so many tour players' bags over the last couple of years. There was a quote when the first edition high toe came out, and he's moved over to the States now. He's working on the PGA Tour. A guy heads up our European Tour, a South African guy called Adrian Reifelt, unbelievable wealth of knowledge. And he said when he showed Justin Rose the high toe for the first time, the first words he said, he goes, "This is going to help me win the Masters because of what we can do with this wedge." We did produce it in a 64, and the new model we're doing a 62. So what you'll find is on certain weeks they'll change the wedge setup. You know, with the Masters they'll probably put something like a 62 in, or certainly 60s, because if you look at the undulations and the runoffs on some of the greens at Augusta, you know, that they've got to get as much loft to the golf ball, but get as much control and as much spin as quickly as possible to try and hold, you know, the saver putt. So I wouldn't say, even week to week, you'll get difference with wedges. You know, if you go to, say, the Open this year, Royal St George's, our European Tour guy, so Sam Day, he's really good. He spends a lot of time on grinding the wedges. So he will spend a lot of the time grinding wedges out to take the bounce off, because obviously playing at a links course, you're not going to need as much bounce as, say, a course that's on the west coast of the US or somewhere in like Hawaii where you're playing off totally different grass. Yeah. So yeah, I would say there's no specific usual setup of, you know, 50, 54, 58, 52, 60, 60. Each play will be different, and each play could be different from one week to another, depending on where they play, whether it's a links green or a Bermuda grass or some of the grass on the West Coast, because it will be totally different the way the ball springs up, the way it sits on the grass. So to answer your question, there's no really a stock setup.
And I seen him the other day, Faldo was taking the piss out of Jason Day because he changes wedges every 2 weeks. And I was thinking, that's probably quite long, is it? Like, when do they change the wedges for sharpness?
Again, each play is pretty different. It's interesting that you say that about Jason Day. I mean, to be fair, Jason Day is probably the best short game pitcher in the game. So I probably wouldn't be the one to kind of Faldo taking the mick out of, because, you know, he's unbelievable with the short game.
I think
game.
He was more jealous because he's changing his wedges every 2 weeks. Faldo probably had the same set for the season, didn't he?
to be honest, I might have got this wrong. I always thought Jason Day was one of the longer ones, which doesn't change his wedges. I think Rory changes it up maybe every 6 weeks, I think, or every six tournaments. You know, if they go to Augusta, they'll probably have fresh wedges put in. Yeah. That's one thing that gets overlooked for an amateur golfer, I would say, you know, any level of not changing their wedges enough. You know, and that's where, you know, a head pro or a custom fit that they go and see, they can see the performance difference with the wedges from, you know, let's say they've got one of our wedges, an RSI TP wedge from 2015, 2016, you know, and they'll hit some pitches or, you know, some flop shots, and you look at the numbers on the TrackMan or the quad, and you give them a brand new wedge with fresh grooves. Our wedges now, they're all raw faces, you know, so you're going to see a difference in the spin because of how much they're going to grab onto the golf ball.
Yeah.
The best analogy I would give an amateur golfer who maybe doesn't think they're going to get better performance by new wedges is a tire on your car. You know, you're not going to get as much grip on control if you've been driving around the same tires for 4 years with put on a brand new set of Bridgestones on your car. You're going to get more grit. You're going to get more control. There's no different with wedges. I would say that's one thing which is massively overlooked for the amateur golfer.
Yeah, definitely. And then the putters as well. Obviously, we've seen, don't know if you can comment on this, but the two ball have just literally used the spider and just put two balls on top of it, haven't they? They're the team.
Yeah.
A bit of a copycat move.
Yeah, I think, I always take that as a positive when you see another manufacturer, you know, seeing similar products to what you've had. And, you know, it goes the other way. You know, we've done incredibly well with our high toe wedge, but, you know, Callaway brought it, the PM grind, you know, they brought it to market a little bit before us, but we put our own spin on it. So, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're trying to get, you know, John Rahm's one of the best putters in the world.
Yeah.
I know the first week out when he flipped to Callaway, he still had his Spider X in play. And to be fair, they've got him into their own putter quite quickly. I would say in terms of the putter, you know, you see a trend of putters, you know, over the years of how it's changed. I mean, I'll put it to you two. What putters have you got in play?
I've got a Scotty Cameron. I've had it since I was about what? I reckon I've had that since 2008. Same putter.
Which Scotty have you got in? What model?
Newport 2.
Your classic, yeah. So the classic, that would be your ping answer, you know, your classic.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do a version in it called a Soto or a Santa Fe, or a Santa Fe style neck, which is that's the Soto. The Juno is our version of that. What about you, Kev? What putter have you?
I've got an obviously White Hot 7 with the fangs.
So that's the fangs, isn't it? So you can see, I mean, Mark, you've had that in for a while. That would be your traditional putter, probably when we all started to play golf. That's what you tended to see, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you look at that PGA Tour now, it's rare, or it's getting rarer, that you will see that typical blade, Newport, Ping Answer style, Juno style putter. You know, everybody is moving towards a little bit more
mallet,
forgiveness, more stability, more mallet, because you can quantify on a launch monitor the difference and what that's going to give you. There's a real easy way to kind of look at the stability of a mallet or a spider based putter. And the next time you two play golf together, hopefully that's sooner rather than later on the next announcements. But if you hold your putter up, and obviously you'll have a toe hang a little bit more on yours, Mark, where if yours is a single bend, Kev, I'm guessing yours will be a face balance putter. Depending on what neck you've got on it, you might have a little bit of a toe hang. So what you'll find with a mallet style putter, obviously there's the way it's made, it's a little bit more back weighted for a little bit more stability. So if you take your putter, Mark, and you'll let it dangle, and you'll have a little bit more toe hang on yours. If I say that's the putter face, it's hard for your listeners to hear this. As I explain,
you can watch it as well.
If you tap the middle of your putter face, Mark, it's not going to twist or move as much. Right. If you do it right on the toe and right on the heel, you do a little tap, you'll see it's going to move. You know, because where the CG location is on that putter. Now, you don't miss it out the toe, and you don't miss it out the heel that much, but you'll miss it slightly off center towards the toe and off the heel. Now, if you tap that just a little bit off center, you'll see that your putter will move. Now, if you take one of our spider putters and you tap it in the middle, it's not going to move the same way your Scotty ain't going to move in the middle.
Okay.
But if you tap it right across the face, because the way it's made and it's a little bit more back weighted, the face doesn't move. So that's why if you get it a little bit off center, toe or heel, the spiders ain't going to move as much, which is going to give more deflection, which is going to obviously stop you missing as many putts. That's why we've seen such a transition into mallet-based putters, not only for us, but all manufacturers. You know, even Tiger, you know, he come close to winning the Open at Carnoustie, 2019, I think it was. And he was struggling with his putter in the prior tournament, and we got him into a mallet style putter in one of ours. I mean, we didn't actually make that individual putter, but you imagine the internet and social media went absolutely mad. How'd you get that putter? Because even he's seen the benefits of moving into something that has a little bit more MOI, a little bit more forgiveness and impact. Obviously he's gone back to his traditional Scotty now, but you know, all level of golfers can see the level of performance you gain by a more forgiving putter.
Yeah,
but it reminds me of the old people use blades because you want more workability, but really you just, it seems to me that you're making the game hard for yourself by having less of a miss.
It is very similar to you know, everybody loves that look of, you know, Mark, your putter, you've probably got that in because it, you know, it looks great. It's a great putter. It looks classic, the same as a blade. You know, a blade is a classic looking. I know our blades that we have, we've got a new P7 MB, which looks incredible. We've got the Tiger Iron, the P7 TW. It looks incredible. Give me a 3-iron on a Saturday comp at 8 o'clock in the morning to hit off the first at Wallasey. I'm not going to feel that comfortable or that sexy looking down at it.
If it's
10 degrees and I'm going to knife it. So, you know, again, the best players in the world, they're not bothered. Rory, give him a 3-iron out of a set. He's going to flush it the same way he's going to flush a 9-iron.
Yeah.
If you were going to, well, I'm going to go and get fitted for irons. I've got like forged, muscle back Mizunos.
MP63s.
When I've just been having a feel of the cav, not cav, so much cavity backs, but a forge with like a little bit of a hollow in, the feel just feels much better, and you've got more of a miss. You've got, haven't you, like your center. What are the center of gravity's like compared to blades on these newer irons?
Well, when you've got, say, a blade, it's a one piece. You know what it is. It's a one piece blade. So when you absolutely middle it, feels flush, you know, feels great. When you get it out the toe, performance obviously drops, the ball speed's down. and you're gonna realistically gonna finish short of the green. Obviously, when you move into something like we launched a P770, which is a Ford hollow construction, when you get out the middle, it feels great. You know, it does feel different to a Blade. You know, I'm not gonna tell you it feels exactly like a Blade. It doesn't. A Blade is very much a Blade, but it certainly feels much better than what a cast cavity has been like over the years. Yeah. You know, we've been able to produce a golf club which is gonna, you know, feel great because it's forged. But if you catch it out the middle or you catch it at the toe, you're gonna catch it at the heel, it's gonna preserve ball speed, it's gonna preserve, you know, where you're gonna finish on the green and still hopefully get you on the green to give you a putt for a birdie. You know, that's what we've tried to do. We've done it with P790. And when we launched that in 2017, it was a bit of a soft launch, to be honest. It was a bit of, we didn't kind of, you know, what we do as a brand, we tell the story, I believe, better than anybody else. The way we go to market with products is exceptional. But that product in particular, it was a bit of a soft launch. We didn't go and shout from the treetops about it. And we got it into market, and we got it in the field, in the fitting base, and we're like, my God, these look incredible. They perform incredible. And we're seeing golfers off a scratch handicapper, and we're getting somebody at 18. You know, they were originally thought that we were going to target that maybe 7 to 12 handicapper, and then it just went absolutely berserk. They sold out within like 2 months, couldn't get them for 2-3 months because we couldn't buy them quick enough. We've kind of done that again with the 770s, which is a slightly smaller version of the 790, still forged, still very much a player's. But if you look at that, I don't know whether you boys have seen them. If you look at it from behind, it looks like a Blade. Looks absolutely incredible in the bag, but it's going to give you the performance on off-center hits as like a cast cavity would. Mm. So that would be, you know, and the way we do now, the way we can blend the sets. I've just ordered my set for the year. I've ordered some of the long and the mid-irons in the 770s, but put the MCs in, so a forged cavity, a one-piece construction, but just that little bit more help versus an MB. Everyone loves a Blade. It's just whether you can...
I'll just tell you that you don't hit it from the middle, so just stop using blades in your 3-iron because you just can't...
Well, I made that major ego mistake. I had the Nike, remember the Nike Pro Combos where you've got the...
I had the Pro Combos, yeah.
So I was getting really good with the lower irons. I think it started from an 8th. The Blade was 8-9 pitch, wasn't it? So I was hitting them. I think, do you know what? I fancy myself with a set of irons. And I went and bought, remember the Cleveland CG1s? I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah.
Just a full-on Blade. Worst mistake of my life. My golf just went right down from that moment on, straight back to the cavities. I'll never touch a Blade again.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the Pro Combos were they were a great iron because of what it did. It targeted the golfer that's got an affinity to the player's iron that, you know, it is easy. You know, we'd all, three of us would much prefer to have an 8-iron into a green every time than mixing in with a 4 and a 5-iron. That's just the nature of the beast. So our miss hits are going to be better with an 8-iron versus a 5-iron because it's got more loft. You know, it's a shorter iron, shorter distance. So they've done really well in that. And we've definitely seen a trend of that since we've launched the 790, because the players that were in your blades or your one-piece forged, they were wanting that help in the longer irons because they were seeing the performance, like ball speed off that. And, you know, how much easier is that to hit? So we've seen a trend with that. And what we launched... Again, put my memory to pace now. We launched the original 790s in 2017 with a set of P730 blades. So what we were seeing is a golfer wanted to combo that with a 790 and the 730, but it's really difficult to do because the starting points on the lofts were different and ultimately they're going to perform different. So to really blend the set for a golfer, really you needed 2 7-irons. Yeah. You needed a 7-iron and a 790 and the 7-9 in the blade to be able to flow the set better.
Nice.
But what we've done, you know, what we can do with what we've got now in the P range, we can pretty much do any combo and there's a flow and we have a chart to be able to do that. Nice. You know, some of the orders I've seen from our team now, work with Garth and Alan, he's ordered 770s in his 3, 4, 5, 6 and 7 in his, yeah, longer irons in 770, 6 and 7 in the MCs, and in the blades, he's gone 8-9 pitch. So trying to replicate that kind of night pro combo is what you've done. And then we'll change the lofts accordingly to make sure you're in the right launch parameters, the right spin parameters, to making sure that you're going to get the right yardage for your shot, because you don't want a 7-iron going 170 and an 8-iron going 146.
No,
you know, so there's got to be the right way to stagger it. I think Matt Wilson, I think from memory, I think we went combo with his, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah.
What about, you know, you see loads of players are bringing in, like, I've been hearing shouts of, like, 9 woods and, like, 7 woods a lot on the telly lately. Are you finding a bit of that, or is that horses for courses again?
Yeah, no, DJ put 7 wood in, I think.
Is it actually a 7? Like a...
Yeah. I mean, they're just trying to hit a, number, yeah. And that's what I would say is, you know, to amateur golfers out there, own your own bag.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be driver, 3 wood, 5 wood, 4 iron to pitching wedge and a 56 and a 60. You know, play around with it. You know, work on your own course. You know, your two golf courses are totally different. You'll have, you know, Formby Hall's got loads of water. S&A is a links course, totally different dynamic. So if, Mark, if you were a member at Formby, and Kev, if you were a member at S&A, you would have two different golf bags if you played at them different courses, because you're going to have different levels of shot. And that's what I always say, you know, build your own golf bag. So I get golfers coming to see me and go, yeah, I got fitted for a driver with you earlier on the year, loved it. Can I have a look at the 3 wood? Like, yeah, let's have a look. You know, get them in a 3 wood, great performance, get the right shaft, right head combo and whatnot. And I'll say, why do you want a 3 wood? Or where do you play? And let's say play a Formby Hall. All right, tell me where do you use your 3 wood then? Oh, well, I use it on this hole if I'm not driving that well. All right, okay. So a bit of a backup. Okay. All right. How many times do you go into a par 5 with it? I don't really, because, you know, if I get my driver going well, the 3 wood's gonna go too far. Okay, well, what do you do then if you haven't got the 3 wood? Well, I'll go with my 3-iron. I do have to kind of chase it there. Okay. So why are we putting a 3 wood in your bag for one shot that you might not feel comfortable in the driver? It's absolutely no point.
Yeah.
So it goes back to that, how we've changed from buying a 3-iron to sandwich off the rack in the shop. It's changed, build your own bag, you know, get into, you know, telling people let's scrap the 3 wood. If that's the right thing to do, look at a 5 wood. Let's have a look at the TrackMan, right? You're carrying that 237, 240, 235. Do you get that shot? Are you going into that par 5? Well, yeah, that's why I don't hit the 3 wood, because 3 wood's going 250, 255. Take the 3 wood out because it's not relative to you. Now, you make that relative to a tour player, Rory will have a driver, a 3 wood, a 5 wood, a 7 wood, a 4 hybrid, a 3 hybrid, you know, and he will, depending on where he's playing, change that. If you look at images of his his bag, I think Trotty had imaged, he's just had a shaft change. It looks like he's going to put some X7s in playing his irons this week, which I think is the first time he's ever changed his shafts and his irons since he's been on the tour. But they'll be building 15, 16 clubs for his bag, because where he's going to play is going to throw maybe a different wedge in, or he's going to throw a 7 wood in instead of a 3-iron because he's maybe playing at altitude and he needs a different descent angle. You know, amateur golfers generally, unless you're an elite amateurs play the same golf course every Saturday and they play with the mates through the week. Build your bag to your course. That's a massive bit of advice I would give to any listener.
Yeah. So take that advice myself. I think I need to change of clubs. Yeah. one question I did want to ask Dan, obviously, before we wrap up on things. If I remember rightly, in the Saudi, DJ was using the sim.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously Koepka was using the sim too. Both were the
same week.
Same week, yeah. So what was the reason for DJ using the sim at that? Because I've just seen that TaylorMade have done a little promo where he's using the sim too, I believe, on the 10th at Riviera. They've just done a driving challenge with Morikawa and Wolf.
Right, okay, interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen that. Has that just come out?
That's just come on Instagram, literally just before we come on the podcast. So it'd just be interesting just to understand that if it's only 2 weeks ago, Saudi. So as he changed.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a great question, and I'll give you the two different answers because it's the two different situations. So Kepka's obviously not a TaylorMade staff player. He's a non-contract player. He has been using on off, mostly he has been using it is the M5 driver, and he had a little play towards the back end of last year, I think, with another manufacturer thing, but then he's put the M5 driver back in play. And I didn't know this, but somebody told me about it and showed me the clip. I can't remember what tournament it was. He was playing with Rory a few weeks ago, and Rory, it was the first week Rory was out with the sim too. So, do you know what? I think it might have been Torrey Pines. I think that's where it was. I think it was Torrey Pines. And Rory's absolutely bombing this driver, like 340, 345. He's got it on a string. Now, apparently when they got on the shot tracer, I mean, you know, Brooks is, you know, he's a heavy hitter, isn't he? You know, he's an athlete. And there was a couple, he was like 20 behind Rory. You know, Rory is pound for pound the longest. You look at his height and his build compared to some of the other players. He's so long because he's, you know, he's optimum for as a driver of the golf ball. And apparently there's an image of Brooks looking at his driver because he's not sure whether the face is cracked because Rory's that far past him. Now that is obviously come from, you know, such a jump and performance versus Rory being so much further. He's obviously thought, right, I need to have a look what this is all about. He's obviously very close with DJ. I think he has a great relationship, and you know, and DJ will obviously fly the flag for TaylorMade and speak very highly of the product. So the team in the US obviously spent time with Brooks, got that in play, got that dialed in, and he's obviously won with that, which is brilliant. You know, we can't use any imagery of him winning with that because he's a non-contract player. You know, we can say congratulations to the winner of the Phoenix Open. You know, he's using our product. And then the DJ one is you know, he is our staff player. He's the number one player in the world, and he's, you know, I think it's probably fair to say he's by far the number one best player in the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's flying he's flying out there on his own when he's playing well. So he's number one player of the world. He's just come off the back of a Masters win. He's driving the ball the best he's ever driven it. And now we're telling, right, DJ, I know you're the best player in the world. You're hitting your driver as good as you've ever do, but we want to take that one off
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that's a different level of a tour fitter's job. You know, they're going to be tasked with getting that new driver in play for him. So as I understand, you know, he's flown from the US to Saudi. He's won with that sim. You know, it's not really the time to maybe spend as much time with DJ out there because we haven't got the truck there. You know, the team maybe wouldn't be as big on the ground.
Yeah.
TaylorMade point of view is what it's going to be at Riviera this week. You know, where it's in California, it's in the same coast as where we're based. So, So as I understand, we were due to spend some time with DJ at Pebble Beach last week. I think he was due to play and you know, a good fitting session to make sure we dial in and get him into the product. But coming on the back of winning in Saudi and flying, I think he was that far east, he probably could have gone the other way to come back round to California. He could have gone either way on his flight. So he's probably got about a 16-hour flight back to the west coast of the US.
Yeah.
And it, you know, he's probably shattered. So he pulled out of the tournament, didn't he, last week in Pebble. And I thought
it's more than the flight to blame for that, like if he's on the old pop.
And I think we had some time booked in. I didn't realise he was playing this week at Riviera until to be honest, until I looked at the Sky Bet odds yesterday to see who was playing.
I'd
seen his name down.
Yeah, he's up there.
So, I would imagine that the tour team for the US will, what day is today? It's Wednesday. So they would have spent some time with him probably yesterday, trying to get him into the new product. You know, and it's, you know, it's got to be better. They'll get him into it. You know, we've just got to show him the backup of the numbers of why he needs to move into it. And what he'll see is, he'll see, you know, a little bit more forgiveness versus sim product. He's going to see a little bit more stabilization on the ball speed on off-center hit. Granted, he doesn't miss the middle of the bat very often.
Yeah.
You know, and if we can gain a little bit more speed out of him and make him hit one more fairway over a four-round tournament, that's going to be worth more world ranking points. That's going to be worth more money to him. That could be the difference of him winning the Masters in, I think it's 50 days I've seen today on social media.
Not too far away.
Yeah. So, you know, we you know, the tour team we have in the US, you know, are exceptional. You know, we will get him into the driver. It's just going to take a little bit more time because he's playing so well. As I say, he might tee it up tomorrow at Riviera and he's got that in play. As I say, I didn't see that any of the images with him testing with Morikawa. Yeah, I think out of our staff players, I think he's the only one who we hadn't transitioned into yet. But I think, you know, I think he played with it at Torrey. I think he played with it in Torrey, but he's gone to Saudi and just put the sim back in play. I think for a little, you know, probably hasn't done much testing that week, flying from one continent to another.
Yeah.
And stuck, you know, what he's won the Masters with. So we'll definitely get him in, so it's just going to take it a little bit more time.
A bit risky, isn't it? Like, if you start pushing it, then he goes and donkeys it around, he comes and blames you.
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes you don't, you know, you're not going to call him or go to him on if he says this week, if he rocks up on a Wednesday or a Tuesday and says to the team, listen, guys, I ain't changing this week, they're not going to stand there and try and
push
to get him in, because, you know, but that's not the relationship. You know, we're a team, we're a partnership. They are an extension of TaylorMade. They're, you know, one of our staff ambassadors. You know, he will know we want him in the new driver, and he'll want to be in the new driver. He just wants to get as much testing in it. You know, as I say, he might be in it this week, and he might go and win the tournament. You know, Brooks has put it in for 1 week and go and won.
That
stacks up.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, he's moved up a couple of grades, hasn't he? Because if he's using the M5 and then goes straight to the Sim 2, he's going to see them improvements, isn't he? Yeah. No, it's brilliant to see as well. It's crazy the way they both won. Well, we were saying on the show, weren't we, Kev, that one had the Sim 1 and then the other had the Sim 2, and they both go and win. Perfect market. And even though you can't really use him.
Yeah, he's, he's just out there. I think that, you know, golf's in a great spot, isn't it? You know, if you look at, even if I don't look at it as a TaylorMade point of view, you know, Shambo, what he's doing, you know, he puts bums on seats. People, you know, when you look at that Masters, it's like the Bryson show in the build-up to that week, because everybody, you know, he talked himself up. Well, yeah, you know, what I do.
I'm going to drive it, over these trees, and I'm going to put it in other fairways. I'm going to, what was he saying? It's a 67, yeah.
It's a par 67 for me. And then he goes and does what we do, and it's three off the tee. He lost his ball.
On the second hole. Yeah.
It's unbelievable TV. Golf's in a great spot. You know,
we want to see
DJ, Rory, Jason Day, you know, all the top players being at the top, you know, Tiger being the absolute needle mover, everybody from a certain age, everybody's hero, everybody's icon. He's,
what a man.
You know, he's the GOAT, isn't he? He is
definitely the
class.
GOAT.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Any more, Mark?
No, that's unbelievable. I mean, we've took enough of your time there, mate, yeah.
Listen, I could talk about golf.
No, but
all night.
That's why we got you on, to just pick your brains and get some knowledge and give the listeners some knowledge, is what, like, I'm thinking that they might not understand or know about, like, especially I didn't know about the tour heads being the same now. That's brilliant knowledge.
Yeah, even for us, mate, I've learned all about Kev, but I've learned so much there off listening to you. You're a very knowledgeable man, Daniel. And obviously we thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with
welcome. I was gonna say, where are you going for your fitting for your irons?
To you. There you go. Just say, give me whatever Tiger's got.
So you're going back to the blades conversation now.
Yeah,
I've always been Mizuno me, but I'm just gonna do it with a try and fit and get the numbers proper done instead of just buying something. I'm gonna do it properly.
Yeah, we will. We'll come and see you, Dan.
Whatever brand or manufacturer you go to, you know, you'll see the difference. And you know, when you get dialed in, you know, you're both good players, so you're gonna see the difference. From a tailor-made standpoint, I will be at SNA this year. I will be at
but I missed it. Something happened and I missed it.
Was you the reason why? That's right. I had to stay behind. You didn't turn up.
I was on in the morning.
I talk about ball strikers and blade users. Jim Payne strikes a golf ball at SNA. Wow.
Yeah, I remember going to see Jim in open qualifying round Formby, and he hit three iron into one of the par fours, wind into your face to about a foot. He is a player. What a player.
Yeah. He only changed his irons year before last. He had a set of Max Fly blades.
Yeah.
And you talk about grooves going, like you could nearly see the Max Fly through the front of the face. He'd worn it that much. And we got him into a set of TaylorMade P730 blades, but he just wants a little bit more fit. He's got some graphite in his blades. And see, there's a combo of some, you know, custom fit, a set of blades with a strong recoil graphite shaft. Ex-tour player, ex-European tour winner, but loves a blade, loves the feel, wants to hit a number. Jim's the perfect example of a custom fit.
We're working on Jim, trying to get him on the show to tell everyone a story, but...
What did he say?
No one wants to hear me. No one wants to hear an old man, he was saying.
Say what, Jim is... He's very funny. Yeah, he's. I've seen him come out with some one-liners with some visitors while I've been in that pro shop, and it's just completely gone over their heads. Like they just didn't get it at all, and I'm just in the corner giggling. Yeah, yeah.
His one-liners are the best. I've been at SNA since I was 14, and yeah, I've obviously got to know Jim very well over the last 15 years. Yeah, what a man.
He come in, I went to SNA and I bought one of them flapjack bars and it was out of date. And I was like, Jim, these are out of date. Well, he went to pound, please. And I went, well, Jim, they're out of date. He went, all right, 120 then.
Oh, legends.
He used to be our MD for Europe, TaylorMade Europe. He used to be his playing partner with Jim when they were younger for the county. So it's small world, so he's got kind of a connection with our big boss. Yeah,
he's won a silver medal, hasn't he, in the Open, Jim? Pretty sure.
He's won loads. Yeah, it's a two-time European tour win. I think it was the Italian Portugal Open. And the Italian was it, something like that. Yeah, yeah, because he's got his tour card for the seniors tour.
Has he?
Because if you win as a European Tour member on the full European Tour, when you're 50, you get a year's free pass on the Seniors Tour.
Oh, we need to get him on the show and ignite that flame, don't we? Yeah. See him in all the
media. Need to push him, yeah.
Hey Dan, did you say you got me to Paul Waring there? We'd love to have a chat with him if you can arrange that. Or give him the nudge, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he'll do that. No problem, yeah. I'll sort that out, yeah.
Yeah,
Another thing we ask every guest as well is coming to play in our Bogey Boys Golf Day that we're having this year. Sorry, we're going to arrange something. So love to get you down there and have a little knock.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be there. Yeah, I'll bring some TaylorMade golf balls.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't be bringing your whole setup trying to sell everyone TaylorMade. You can give a nudge.
I'll mention to Bolly when.
Or anyone else that might want to come on. Give them a shout and we'd love to just chat, just get some knowledge and give the listeners something
He's good on the podcast. He does, the three of us grew up together. It's me, Paul, Joe, Alex Evans. He does a little bit on YouTube.
Alex.
So he's obviously does a lot. I think Paul quietly likes doing the whole podcast and the. I rang Alex today. I said, "Yeah," I said, "I'm doing a podcast with Bogey Boys lad tonight." I said, "Because you still haven't asked me to come on one of yours," so I was giving him some stick, and he's like, "We've done a couple of encore videos at Wallasey." He said, "Well, we've done that." I was like, "Yeah, you've been binned now." Paul will come on, no problem. Yeah, I'll speak to him.
Perfect, Dan. Legend, mate. Thanks a lot for your time, mate. And as I say,
we have to get a knock as soon as the courses are open.
Yeah,
we'll come over.
Yeah,
there.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll do round on each. You know, we'll come to Wallasey, Formby Hall, and SNA. Definitely. There's been, say, as you said before, the changes that they've done at Wallasey so far look incredible. So the last time you've played it, the next time will be totally different.
Brilliant. Look forward to it. Definitely look forward to it. Yeah. I love Stableford as well. As we'll have to play.
It's good for me. It's good for me.
Perfect. All right then, mate. Yeah. Well, look, thanks again, Daniel. I'd say, appreciate you taking the time to come and speak to us. And I'd say we'll catch you up very soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rowers. Take care. Cheers, boys.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.
Right here, so are we talking? Cold topped it.
Ready to go? Yeah.
Okay, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh boy, is he out of sync.